prepare yourself for the terror. The prison of madness, where few enter and none return.
Welcome to Unsung Horrors. With Lance. And Erica.
Leave all your sanity behind. It can't help you now.
Happy October, and welcome to another episode of Unsung Horrors, the podcast where we discuss underseen horror movies, specifically those which have fewer than 1,000 views on Letterboxd. I'm Erica.
I'm Lance.
And because it's October, that means Horror Gives Back is underway. It is our fourth annual? Holy shit, I don't even remember what
three,
day.
Three, I think.
We did the first one in 2020, and that year counts. So this is the fourth one. But that year it was like a free for all, like just donate to wherever. And we didn't know who was donating where, doing what. And then the next year we were like, okay, let's get organized here, folks. And then We did the Trevor Project and then Best Friends last year and Best Friends again this year.
That's right.
So once again, we are raising money for Best Friends Animal Society. Donate a dollar or more per horror movie that you watch in October. You can follow our prompts. You can do your own, do whatever. We've got a link to the fundraiser in show notes, in our link tree, and on Twitter. So you can find the way to donate through there. And we appreciate every single one of you that does donate. You can do just a one-off donation if you don't have time to participate. We totally get it. But the animals would appreciate it if you did.
Yes.
So to kick off October, we are going to be talking about Two-Fisted Tales from 1992.
Two-Fisted Tales. Three bizarre stories of revenge, madness, and deceit.
What are you staring at? Have you never seen a gunslinger before?
Three unforgettable stories, too disturbing not to see. Two-Fisted Tales.
This is available to watch on YouTube, and as of this recording, it has 531 views on Letterboxd. Two-Fisted Tales is an anthology. Most anthologies have a wraparound story, but like Tales from the Crypt, Two-Fisted Tales instead has a host of sorts introducing each segment. Here we have the gunslinger. He's a wheelchair-bound, trigger-happy war veteran named Mr. Rush. And like Tales from the Crypt, each of the segments has a bit of a twist ending, except for, the middle one doesn't. So I take that back. So the first segment is Showdown, and it is about an outlaw in the Wild West whose exploits and murders have finally caught up to him after he encounters Texas Ranger Tom McMurdo. The second segment is called King of the Road. This is about a cop named Garrett who has to contend with a young punk who tries to get him to drag race, something Garrett did in the past and has tried to cover up due to an accident that he caused. And then the third and final segment is Yellow. This is about a young soldier whose cowardly acts during battle not only get other men killed, but embarrass his father, who is the commander of the battalion. So we're going to be talking about Tales from the Crypt a lot in this episode. And the reason for that is because pretty much all of the producers behind Tales from the Crypt are involved with this. They tried to launch another TV show just like that. And this film, Two-Fisted Tales, was basically the TV movie set to launch it, but it didn't do so well. And so each of the three segments here ended up as Tales from the Crypt episodes. So some of these you may have actually already seen, but what you didn't see was the gunslinger part of it, the wheelchair-bound, trigger-happy guy. And that's played by William Sadler. Like I said, his name is Mr. Rush. And I don't know about you, Lance, but I think William Sadler is probably one of my favorite character actors.
Yeah, I mean, everything he's in is just memorable. This one, I mean, as this gunslinger who took 12 slugs to the chest, he is so incredibly angry and fucking unhinged.
Yeah.
And as soon as he popped up, I'm like, I hope we were given the reason for his anger, you know, for his, you know, his lewd comments throughout between each segment. Yeah, I mean, I loved him in this, but he became a little grating towards the end because I think, I mean, he was so into his character, which seems to be the complete point. I mean, he took it to the next level. Some of his, like, his comments and stuff.
Yeah. You
know, the hamster fucking limp dick and I'm going to rip your head off. And he gets a little homophobic here and there.
Yeah, he's not very likable. And, you know, but he does have... He did have one that made me chuckle, and that was after King of the Road, which is the drag racing one.
Yes.
And he has a pair of dirty underwear, and he makes a joke about skid marks. That made me giggle.
That made me laugh, too. I have a highlighted note right here of that one. That was pretty damn good, Mr. Rush.
I mean, what I will say, you know, he is no Crypt Keeper, though, when it comes to the jokes. But I think the intent was that he's supposed to be angry, and Two-Fisted Tales is not like a horror comic. And so they're trying to sort of root the host in that world. And from what I know and about Two-Fisted Tales and what I've read from those, he kind of fits with it. But yeah, I'm with you. He does get a little, he's a bit much by the end, especially in the end with the homophobic.
Yeah.
You know, quips and stuff.
I prefer a likable character, you know, either, a terrible character, something that has redeeming qualities or something that I really latch on to introduce every segment.
Yeah.
And Sadler just kind of, I respect the unhingedness. That's a word, unhingedness of Mr. Rush. But yeah, I mean, I'm glad he got what he deserved in the end.
Yeah. So for those who... like may know the name, but can't think of who we're talking about. William Sadler has been in Tales from the Crypt, Demon Knight. He was Death in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. Yeah. He's in lots of Frank Darabont films like The Mist, Shawshank Redemption, and The Green Mile. And he was in this other movie that I saw, I want to say it was this year or last, at Weird Wednesday. And you know what? God bless Laird for bringing the weird sometimes. Lance, I hope you've seen this one, because if you haven't, I think you would love it. It's Trespass from 1992.
I feel like I'm in a Two-Fisted Tale episode here because I was there with you, Erica.
Were you?
Weird Wednesday. Yes. Yeah, I'd seen it before, and this we sat right next to each other.
Goddamn, I have the worst memory.
It was during pandemic, or it was like one of the first Weird Wednesdays back from pandemic, maybe.
Okay, well, that's... Yeah, if it was more than like 2 days ago, I've already forgotten. So, well, no, I'm glad that you've seen it because it's got your boy Cube in it.
Oh, hell yeah. Cube, it has Ice-T, who I think steals the show in that movie.
Yeah.
Bill Paxton plays, I think he's Will Sadler's brother, right?
Uh-huh.
And they're, what, firefighters? Or I forgot what. And they find like a gold. Basically, it's like these gang members hiding all their drug money and stuff.
It's so good. Everyone should watch it.
It's a Walter Hill jam too, by the way.
Yes, that too. Oh my God, I forgot that part too. Yeah, but everyone should see it, including Lance. You've seen it, right?
Erica, if you haven't seen Trespass, go see it with me and we'll see what happens. If we're talking memories, mine's definitely the worst here.
I don't know.
Okay, well, yes, Trespass fucking rules.
Yes.
Will All right. Sadler rules.
He does. I think he's one of the greatest character actors, but he's not the best in this. I think he's one of the best parts of this, and the reason to watch it aside from just watching the individual episodes as Tales from the Crypt, but he's better in other things. I'll leave it at that. So the first segment in the movie is Showdown, and this one is written by 3-time Oscar winner Frank Darabont. His other film credits include films he's directed like Shawshank, The Mist, Green Mile, but he also has writing credits on Nightmare on Elm Street 3, The Blob, Frankenstein 1994, and The Fly 2. He also has credits on, obviously, television. I think most people know him for The Walking Dead. Season 1, after it left, it tanked and I stopped watching, so.
Well, AMC and The Walking Dead like totally supposedly fucked him over.
Oh, 100% they did. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
But he made hundreds of millions of dollars from it and future streaming revenue. So,
I mean, I don't feel sorry for him, but I just, you know, the show sucked after he left.
I could never, I watched the first episode and I thought the sound editing was the worst.
Oh, like I remember you talking about that.
Like, destroying a zombie was just so over the top. Sound effects and walking on grass, even like they really treated it literally like a video game, and it was too much.
Yeah,
but yeah, Frank Darabont rules. I met him once, actually.
Did you?
Yeah, it was at a Mondo Gallery show. I guess this is probably back in 2012. I think it was their first Universal Monster show. I think it was, because Drew Struzan was there too, and their friends. But he was super nice, Frank Darabont. It was a huge line to get in. It was one of Mondo's first like gallery shows here in Austin. Mm-hmm. And he was like taking pictures with everybody, chatting away. And him and Drew Struzan, they were just, he was very, very personable, very, very polite with everybody. So I speak highly of him, even though I only said hi and shook his hand. And
I mean, it's always nice to hear, though, when you like someone's work and you find out they're actually a nice person, you know?
Yeah.
So he has two writing credits for Tales from the Crypt. Obviously, one of them is for Showdown, since that was repurposed as a Tales from the Crypt episode. But he also wrote another one from season 2, episode 10, called The Ventriloquist Dummy. And I just watched this one recently. I don't remember. I probably watched it when it was on originally, but I have the box set. And so I went back and watched it, and I didn't remember it, but it was really great. It had Don Rickles and Bobcat Goldthwait in it. And
oh, yes.
Anytime you got a ventriloquist dummy in it, I'm 100% in. I'll watch any dumb shit with a ventriloquist dummy, with a shark, you know, with a ventriloquist dummy riding a shark, you know, just give it to me. I'll watch all of it.
Yeah, throw in Don Rickles into any type of horror setting and I'm sold.
Yeah, it was great. So I highly recommend that one if you have that set or a way to watch Tales from the Crypt. Season 2, Episode 10, The Ventriloquist Dummy is really good. Showdown was directed by Richard Donner. He actually has some experience directing television episodes. In the late 50s, he directed episodes of shows such as The Man from U.N.C.L.E., The Fugitive, and The Twilight Zone. But he's probably most well known for the films that he's directed, which include Goonies, Superman 1 and 2, The Lethal Weapon series, The Omen. And he also directed that Ventriloquist Dummy Tales from the Crypt episode that Frank Darabont wrote. So they've collaborated again. And his, I can't remember which profile said it, but one of them that I looked at said occasional comic book writer. And I was like, what the fuck? So I had to look this up. And apparently in the 2000s, he wrote a few Superman stories for Action Comics.
Oh, nice. I did not know that.
I mean, it makes sense. He directed the best Superman movie, so... You know, let the man write a comic. So the score is by Michael Kamen, who has scored nearly 70 films. A lot of probably everyone knows the Lethal Weapon series score. I can't recall the Die Hard score, but he did the one for that as well. Event Horizon, Brazil, The Dead Zone, and the classic film Roadhouse.
And he handled all the orchestral arrangements for Pink Floyd's The Wall. And my favorite Pink Floyd album, The Final Cut. I love those records. Roger Waters. I think I've talked about Roger Waters and Pink Floyd in past episodes. But yeah, no, he handled all that stuff on The Wall and The Final Cut.
Yeah. So we've got some huge names behind this. And to top it all off, we also have the cinematographer, which is Hiro Narita, who shot Hocus Pocus, which I'm sorry, I'm going to say it. I hate that movie. Like, I think it's... it's fine for children, but there's like adults that literally geek out over that movie.
Didn't they just come out fairly recently with a sequel, or they are?
I think so. Yeah, they did. I think it was last year, and everyone was like losing their shit. They're like, oh my God, Hocus Pocus. I'm like, you are an adult, sir. You are 40. You have a mortgage. And you are excited about Hocus Pocus.
We were just talking about how awesome Superman is.
People
have Hocus Pocus.
Superman is not a child's movie.
Okay.
Superman
I've never seen the Hocus Pocus movies. I can't dog it.
But. Okay. I mean, to each their own. But honestly, like, you know, I don't get mad when like kids are like, I like Hocus Pocus. I'm like, good for you. And then 40-year-old's like, Hocus Pocus. I'm like, get fucked. Like,
that Nibbler's so hot.
It just seems annoying to me. I don't know. It just feels so Disney and just gross to me. I don't know. Anyway, Narita has also shot The Rocketeer, Star Trek VI, and Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. So getting into the cast for Showdown, David Morse stars as the Texas Ranger, Tom McMurdo. He's another great character actor. although some people probably hate him as the dad from or the dad alien from Contact, because that seemed to piss everybody off. I know I didn't care for that ending. But he's also in The Green Mile, 12 Monkeys, The Rock. And I just watched this movie recently because I was like, I don't know how to prepare for this episode, because it's like, I'm not going to watch a bunch of like Richard Donner movies, but do I watch Tales from the Crypt episode? Like, you know, so I did, like, I tried to do like what looks interesting to me that's connected to this. So I watched this movie that David Morse is in called Murder Live! ! From 1997. And it's about a father who takes a talk show host, and think like, this is 97. So think like Sally, Jesse, Raphael type of talk show, where they like, you know, walk around the audience and they have like a panel of like, quote unquote, weird people. And they like question them and make them feel bad for, you know, being goth or whatever. So he takes this talk show host and her audience hostage because he blames her for his daughter's suicide. And honestly, the way that it started out was really cool. Like, it's shot like a reality show, and it even like has these kind of clever scrolling text at the bottom from the news station explaining what's happening. And then there's even a point where, you know, apparently there's a playoff game happening, but like all the stations are airing this hostage situation. And so they have a picture in picture of the game going on, and the David Morse.
Is it a baseball game or a football game?
I don't know. Sports ball, something, maybe baseball. But like David Morse character gets super pissed. He's like, what the fuck is this? Cause he thinks like, he doesn't realize like all the channels have what's going on. So then he starts changing himself because he's got such a huge audience. But I was really into it for like the first half, but then it needed to be about 15 minutes shorter. And it could have been a better satire if it was shorter and not so heavy handed, but I'd recommend it. It's on YouTube if anyone wants to watch it.
Yeah, that sounds cool. Yeah. I love him in Disturbia.
I have not seen that. I have a Shia LaBeouf allergy.
Yeah, there's a lot of Shia LaBeouf going on, but David Morse kind of steals the show as the creepy neighbor, and he really sells the thriller element of that movie. But yeah, if you don't like Shia LaBeouf, stay away.
Yeah, well, I shall continue to do so. The only other main character in Showdown is Neil Guintoli as Billy Quintain. He is they're trying to make him like a Billy the Kid type character. He's basically the outlaw here. But he's also in Shawshank Redemption, and he's also in Child's Play as Eddie Caputo. So we're going to be going segment by segment. So we're going to talk a little bit about this, our thoughts about this segment, and then we'll move on to King of the Road. Lance, any thoughts that you want to share about the first segment, Showdown?
This is probably the weakest segment of the three for me.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I go back and forth between all three because they all have something that I like. Mm-hmm. This one I like a lot because there is the supernatural element, where the others are very straightforward and kind of, there's nothing really supernatural or not too much horror element in the other two.
Yeah.
This is the only one that has it, but I feel like maybe it's because of the ending. I know I'm jumping straight to the end of this.
I mean, it's 20 minutes, so it's
yeah,
fine.
Yeah, it's the shortest. it's almost like a feel-good ending for me, which I find very odd, especially for like a... And I know this was made, you know, for its own Two-Fisted Tales film, but to throw this and incorporate in this with Tales from the Crypt, it doesn't seem like it fits in with almost this feel-good ending that you don't really see coming. It gave me like a Young Guns vibe when Billy the Kid starts talking about pals, like, you know, there ain't nothing stronger than that, you know?
Yeah.
I really like going back to Young Guns, don't I?
You do. But, that, you know, that's fair. Yeah, I agree. The ending is like, why this, you know, you don't have like a comeuppance ending, really. This one is really the only one. No, the last one has a twist, but this one has like a twist that's more in line with the Tales from the Crypt universe. And I do like that part of it, you know, when, even though it is a little predictable, like once he starts seeing all the people he killed, I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, this is what this is. But like when the tourists walk in, like, that's cute. I was like, okay. Yeah. I do like the sort of dreamlike inner cuts of the galloping posse and the sunset that sort of signal him almost kind of like time jumping because he is dead and like figuring out like what's happening. It's got good squibs. Yeah, I think, oh, you know what? There's a part where the tour guide, he's, you know, he's telling the story of Billy's death, and there's like kids on the tour, and the tour guide's like, yeah, he died screaming like a bitch. I was like, it's like, yeah, that's great. Say that in front of kids, please. More of that, please. But yeah, like the ending, it has this like feel good buddy buddy thing where, you know, it's like, oh, I guess the dead don't hold grudges.
Yeah. It's almost like they form a posse and they're like, you know, let's ride, you know, like,
yeah,
like just ride off into the sunset. I mean, I did. Yeah, you're right. When the dead started coming back and their Billy's given this this potion, this drink from the guy, you know, this old man, and he thinks it's some like mushroom peyote thing. I love when the dead start popping up. I did like that, you know, supernatural element, and the ghosts are coming to haunt him. It is predictable, but it gave me almost kind of like that that Fulci's last film, Door to Silence, where it's about a man who isn't really aware he's dead, but he's struggling, but he knows the truth, but he's struggling with it. And I kind of got that from this character and from the whole kind of story of dealing with the bad things you did in life and dealing with your death. But yeah, once the ending kind of turned around for me, I was like, yeah, okay. I mean, I like it because it's like all dogs go to heaven, you know, they're all just gonna, they're all gonna ride into the sunset and have fun and just wreak havoc or whatever in their afterlife. But
yeah,
it didn't feel like a Tales from the Crypt episode or anything.
Yeah. I will say this. I rewatched it, you know, as Two-Fisted Tales, but then I also watched the episodes on the Tales from the Crypt DVD, and the dead makeup actually looks pretty good. It's hard to see in the copy on YouTube because it's a terrible VHS, you know, recording. So, but yeah, I mean, not too much more to say about it from me. There's also not really any good jokes from Sadler or his character, Mr. Rush, on this one either.
Yeah, this one, he's just kind of setting it up. It's kind of straightforward.
Yeah. Anything else on Showdown you want to bring up?
No, I didn't watch. I did go back and watch some of the segments when they aired on Tales from the Crypt. I didn't watch Showdown, the Showdown episode, so I wasn't able to listen to how the Crypt Keeper set it up or ended it. But I'm going to imagine that he ends it something. He was probably over it. He probably didn't like the ending, and he just says something like, "Now that's what I call a boring Western." There's something so generic that doesn't make sense, and there's no wit to it. It's just like he's bored out of his mind. Like he's like, what the fuck is this doing here?
Yeah. I meant to watch that to see like, what's the Crypt Keeper joke on this? So I'll do that and report back to Discord. See, another reason you all should join our Discord, you'll only get that information if you join. Just saying.
That's right.
All right. So let's move on to the second segment, King of the Road. This one is written by Randall Jansen, who wrote Dudes from 1987, Oliver Stone's The Doors, and The Mask of Zorro. And he also wrote another Tales from the Crypt episode, season 2, episode 16, called Television Terror, with Morton Downey Jr. And this is another great episode, and I highly recommend that one as well. This one's directed by Tom Holland, who everyone knows for Child's Play and Fright Night. And the score is by Warren Zevon, who's got 83 film soundtrack credits, but not really. This is one of the only ones where he's got score or composer credits on it. I'm not necessarily a fan, and I don't know if this played into, you know, because you had said like you thought Showdown might have been your least favorite, but you're kind of going back and forth. King of the Road is it for me, and I don't know, but like, and the Warren Zevon soundtrack didn't help me at all, because I don't care for him. It's just whatever to me. I don't dislike his music, but I'm not a fan by any means. Yeah. So I wasn't like, fuck yeah, Warren Zevon's on this.
His songs felt like a fit, because it's almost like his stuff has always been kind of like, my parents listened a bit to Warren Zevon.
Okay.
And it's kind of like dad rock, but trying to be more aggressive, or I don't know. Like,
I can see that. Yeah.
And it kind of fit. It fit with the cop character a lot to me, and just how cheesy he is. But there was one line in one of his songs that where it's like all that really stood out was he's all, "Shoot your load." Did you hear that?
Yes.
I was like, what the fuck is he singing about? Like, we're looking at drag racing here, but no, I do want to do a, I have a quick story about Tom Holland.
Oh, okay.
my brother and I did a gallery show back in 2015 called There Are Two of Me, where, mm-hmm. you know, it was just all this art that we did about like doppelgangers and multiple personalities, all sorts of things. But Tom had noticed Cody's art before on Twitter, and he caught wind of our upcoming show, and he actually published a quick write-up that he did personally of some of the pieces that we had shared to that point on his blog, TH Terror Time. I don't think he even has that site anymore, but I remember him sharing that, and I was like, oh my God, this is like, this is Fright Night, Child's Play. This is Tom fucking Holland. Like, yeah. Such a sweetheart to do that. And, you know, he shared when it was running and, you know, where when it started, when the opening was. It was really nice of him, but I wanted to share that.
Damn, you got all the stories about the nice people in this episode, Lance. And I'm over here yelling at people for liking Hocus Pocus.
Well, wait till I talk about the night Robert Zemeckis babysat me.
What the fuck?
Okay. No, but one of the most impressive things I feel like about Tom Holland's film career is writing Psycho 2, which
it
never, you know, I think most people never in a million years would think that a sequel to, you know, Hitchcock's masterpiece would work, but he fucking did it. He pulled it off. And I think it's a great sequel.
Agreed.
Mainly because of Anthony Perkins' like commitment to the role, but he wrote it really well.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think it's not the first thing that I think of when I think of Tom Holland, but when you're reminded of that, you're like, yeah, that is a good movie. Good for him. So cinematography here for King of the Road is Gary Kibbe. He was Carpenter's DP from the late 80s to early 2000s. So he shot They Live, Prince of Darkness, Vampires, Body Bags, along with some others. So, you know you're in good hands with someone like that, especially for someone who shot Prince of Darkness.
Hell yeah.
And our cast here is Brad Pitt. I don't know who that is, but, you know, I didn't look him. I looked him up on IMDb and just...
Yeah, I noticed his... He had a pretty good looking jawline.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a pretty good looking kid.
Yeah, I didn't see his career really going anywhere, though, so, yeah.
No.
But we have Raymond Barry, who was the detective in Christmas Evil, was in Falling Down, Flubber, and Walk Hard. So, I mean, obviously we know who the real star in this episode is.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about King of the Road. So I don't know if it's like a guy car thing that just is off-putting for me. Like you said, there's no supernatural element in this one. But I do want to know how Brad Pitt's character got to his car so quickly after the first time he talked to Garrett. You know, he's talking to him. Garrett's under his car fixing something. Brad Pitt says like, oh, I'm looking for this guy. And Garrett's like, what? And he quickly comes out from under his car. Brad Pitt's gone. And all of a sudden he walks out in the street and Brad Pitt is in his car. So no supernatural element. So I thought that for this whole thing, I thought there was going to be a supernatural element and that Brad Pitt was a ghost of the teenager who died previously. Because
that's exactly what I thought.
Okay. So it wasn't just me. Cause like also his face is under dark shadows a lot. So I was thinking maybe it could even be another similar twist to like the previous one where he's himself younger but then they show his face and I'm like, okay, it's not him, but I don't know. So I thought that was going to be the twist, but then instead it just turns into, okay, we're going to drag race and oops, I ran into a fucking, one of the big construction equipment things. I don't know what they're called.
Like an excavator.
Yeah. One of those. And like, so the twist is it's not even a twist. It's basically just Billy dies after being the one to insist that they race.
Yeah, it's lame. I mean, I think the story would have just been better if it was some sort of like ghost from the past or the kid who, you know, that the cop killed drag racing, or even like a relative of the dead racer or something to make it interesting other than some, you know, goofy kid that collects like newspaper clippings and is looking for Iceman, you know, just to race him. This one is, like I said, they kind of rotate my favorite to least. Like I do like this one because I like the ending. I like the downbeat ending. It feels like the end of a Tales from the Crypt episode or something that really works in an anthology. It reinforces the notion that cops are asshole that always seem to get away with murder.
That's true.
That kind of pops up. But There's a blooper too. That I don't know if you noticed the blooper, the boom mic hanging down in one of the.
Oh yeah, John pointed that out when we were watching it.
So I respect that. I respect that Tom Holland kept that in. But yeah, I want something in these anthologies that have some sort of ghostly, weird, you know, just unrealistic supernatural element. And this one was just like, I want to fuck your daughter and race you in your drag race. You know, it's dumb.
Yeah. And I'm going to wag my long tongue around at you.
Yeah.
Like,
he plays Billy, who plays Gene Simmons throughout this whole fucking.
Yes.
Because he's flicking his tongue. Like, they even do transition scenes of him just flicking his tongue.
Yeah. Ew. That's, I don't like it.
I mean, Brad Pitt does pretty good in this
role. He does.
As a young. And I saw that Adam in Discord called out, or in his letterbox review, I think he called out 12 Monkeys.
Yeah.
But I went straight to California with a K.
Right.
Have you seen that with Brad Pitt?
Not since it came out. So that's the one with him and Juliette Lewis, right?
Yeah, Juliette Lewis and David Duchovny's in it.
Right,
Yeah, that one, I mean, he goes way harder in that movie than he does here in Two Fisted Tales, but I recommend it. I think it was directed by Dominic Sena. I don't know, but he's there's some similarities between the characters. But there's just not a lot to King of the Road.
Yeah, I mean, he is unhinged, and you know, I like that aspect of it. But yeah, like I think the thing too is like I'm not rooting for anyone in this. Like Brad Pitt's just weird and annoying. I'm not gonna ever root for a cop. And like his daughter, it's like she's not sympathetic because she just makes dumb choices. She's like, I'm going to run off with this hot rod guy who, you know, I met 2 days ago, even though my dad, you know, it's just, I don't know.
She was terrible as an actor. I did
not like her. Okay.
Like I wanted her to go away.
Yeah.
I mean, I sound like a fucking dick, but she was terrible in this.
Yeah. There could have been, like, to make us happy, there could have been a thing where he agrees to drag race to get his daughter back. But when he does so, somehow she ends up dying as a result of it. So it's a win-win. We get a twist ending and she dies.
And immediately our favorite segment. Like, that would have been great.
Yeah. So have a better twist, King of the Road.
It did have one cool character that was the cop's friend, Mole.
Oh, with the guitar in the junkyard?
Yeah. I feel like he should have basically been in the whole episode because he like kind of stole like the entire show. Just a few seconds, he's playing the guitar.
Yeah. Anything else you want to add for King of the Road?
No, other than I think the most captivating shot is when Iceman opens up his mailbox. Brad Pitt's character leaves him something in there.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a tarantula in there.
Yeah.
And barefoot, he just steps on it.
Yeah.
Toughest thing in the whole fucking movie.
Damn right.
But then at the same time, I'm like, you're a fucking asshole. You didn't need to kill him. But whatever. He's a cop.
I know. He's a cop. Cops don't care. Cops,
yeah.
They step first, ask questions later. Stomp first, ask questions later, whatever. All right, so last segment is Yellow. Screenplay here is by Jim and John Thomas. Both have writing credits for Predator and Predator 2. So this is the only one that was actually adapted from a comic book story. This is adapted from a story written by Al Feldstein and illustrated by Jack Davis for the first issue of EC's Shock Super Shock Suspense Stories. The other two were just written in order to have three segments for this film. So this was directed by Robert Zemeckis. He's best known for the Back to the Future series, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Contact with Stupid Alien Dad David Morse, Forrest Gump, and Lance's Babysitter.
Yes. Cody was there too. There was an NDA. I can't even talk about it. So.
All right. Score here is by Alan Silvestri. It's a household name when it comes to scores, even for normies. 100+ credits. Marvel's movies like Avengers, Captain America, obviously Back to the Future, Forrest Gump, The Abyss, The Quick and the Dead. One of my favorite movies that I will never make an apology for, no matter how much, you know, women will wag their finger at me. But I love Overboard and I always will.
Okay, yeah, I mean, it's one of Sarah's favorites, too.
Good for Sarah. Thank you, Sarah.
Yeah, we watched that fairly recently, and it's pretty cringy, but it's Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn.
Exactly. So
it's the best.
Yeah. Cinematography is by Don Burgess. He also did Forrest Gump, Aquaman, and again, Contact. So we get a lot of the same behind-the-scenes people working together in multiple films and coming together for these short segments. Our cast is, I don't think there's an argument against this being the best cast of any of the segments. We've got Kirk Douglas as General Calthrob, his real-life son, Eric Douglas, as Lieutenant Calthrob, Lance Henriksen as Ripper, and Dan Aykroyd as Captain Milligan. Dan Aykroyd as like an army person, like he's still great in this, but it just still feels, I don't know, like I'm just so used to him being a Ghostbuster that it's like in comedies. So I don't know, a war movie or even like a war segment and something like this, it just felt a little weird for me.
Yeah. I mean, this is the only one I remembered seeing from when I watched Tales from the Crypt.
Okay.
Like as a kid, mm-hmm. and mainly because of Dan, I remember Dan Aykroyd popping up, and I remember like, you know, when he pops up in the trenches, I'm like, holy shit, what the fuck is Dan Aykroyd doing here?
And he should be busting ghosts, not fighting Nazis. Or no, this is wrong war. Sorry. Fighting Germans. They're not Nazis yet.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I love about these anthologies is because you get these, I don't know, you get kind of a lot of well-known actors at the time. Mm-hmm. They're just hamming it up in kind of these small roles, these character roles that they'd never be given, you know, in a normal film, they'd never be cast in.
Yeah.
So they're all kind of going for it. I mean, I think Dan Aykroyd's character is probably a bad example, but, you know, if you look at a lot of Tales from the Crypt or like Lance Henriksen, who just is fucking chewing the scene.
Oh,
like,
yes.
He just fucking rules. But I love anthologies. We could talk about some of our favorites in a minute.
Yes, we will get to that. I do want to get back to Lance Henriksen as Ripper, okay. though, because how could I not? He is my favorite character actor. Not just because he shares your name, that's part of it, but yeah. I will literally watch something just because he's in it. And so, Lance, without looking at Letterboxd, I want you to guess how many Ooh. Film credits Henriksen has.
Oof. I'm going to just throw out a number, 211.
I feel like you cheated, but it's 209.
I did not cheat, I swear to God.
Okay.
But I am going to say Lance Henriksen he's one of my most watched actors, and I do look at his filmography a lot.
Okay. So you probably had it like in the back of your brain somewhere.
Maybe.
Okay. That's fair. I can't check if he's cheating or not, folks, because we had to do this one remotely. So
Sorry if I sound like I'm transmitting from a fucking trash can, but
you're fine.
Okay.
So 209. And that's not even getting into television credits, right? So I was convinced. I was like, I spent a good chunk of time watching a bunch of his movies. Clearly, I have seen at least 25% of his movies. No, I've only seen 37 after this week. 35 Lance Henriksen movies. That's it.
That's amazing.
I know. So I did try to bump that number up this week. So I did watch two. I was going to originally watch Nature of the Beast with Eric Roberts, but then I saw the director is Victor Salva and fucked it, Victor Salva. So I did not watch that. I did watch Survival Quest, directed by Don Coscarelli, which is Lance Henriksen basically leads a group of sort of mismatched people, like an old guy and a couple of young guys and a convict and a couple of ladies into the woods to be like nature survivalists for a month. But at the same time, there's also this military group going into the woods to kind of do the same thing, except they're not out there to learn how to survive. They're going out there to learn how to kill. It's kind of like, I don't know if you know about like those alpha male camps, but it's basically like that, where it's just like men going, you know, paying to be like punished by another man and being yelled at so they can feel like more of a man or something. Anyway, I know it's Don Coscarelli, but I got to tell you, like outside of Phantasm and most of the Phantasm sequels, I got some serious problems with a lot of his movies. Like, I don't really like Bubba Hotep.
Was that a Dismember the Alamo or something?
That was the first year it came back and it was just a double feature and it was that and Boarding House. And you and I were both like, what the fuck, Bubba Hotep?
Yeah, and then afterwards it was like a Kumail.
Oh,
like,
God.
And I had to leave.
Ew, yeah, we both had to leave.
I'm surprised that you remembered I was there, Erica. Thank you. Shut up.
That was like a bad, that was because that memory was like, Kumail ruined it for me. And that movie, anyway, terrible. And so this movie, if you took the score out, the score is fucking awful. It makes it, it's just like this like upbeat, we're having fun, we're going camping type of score. No, like it turns gnarly, like people die and people get, you know, shot and all this shit. And I'm like, no, this should be a thriller and it should have an appropriate score for that. And it doesn't. And that's terrible.
Yeah.
The other movie I watched with him in it, though, was Felony from 1995, which I was really excited about. I want you to look this one up on Letterboxd, though, Lance. Felony 1995. I was really excited about it. It turned out to be a very average 90s action movie. But anyone else here will probably look at the cast and be like, fuck yeah, I got to watch this movie.
Yeah, the director, too, David Pryor. He's got some good stuff.
Right. Directed by David A. Pryor, Sledgehammer, Deadly Prey. So, yeah, I had high expectations going into this
one. Oh, yeah. The cast, yeah, solid.
So you've got Jeffrey Combs, Ashley Lawrence, Leo Rossi, Charles Napier, David fucking Warner, Joe Don Baker, and obviously Lance Henriksen. I mean,
well, and there's a featured extra, Donnie DeVito.
I did not see
Danny DeVito. Why did I say?
You said Donnie DeVito.
Donnie DeVito.
I was looking for him. I didn't see him, but I'm sorry, folks. I hate to report that Felony is, I gave it 3 stars because I was like, I'm mildly entertained and the extra half star is mainly for the cast, I guess. But yeah. It was disappointing. That. So,
yeah, I didn't watch any Lance Henriksen films for this episode. I mean, this year I did see The Artifice Girl, which I talked about from South By, where he pops up at the end very surprisingly. And it's, you know, it's not a spoiler, but I loved that movie and he was really fantastic in it. Yeah. And then I watched Hellraiser Hell World earlier this year.
Yeah.
Which is terrible. I did not like that.
It is terrible, but honestly, it's the best of the post part 4 Hellraisers.
No, I watched, what was it called? Revelations.
Oh, how dare you? Doug Bradley's not in that.
No, I know. It's terrible, but I liked it better than Hellworld.
Oh, I
know. And even Lance Henriksen's in Hellworld, but I could not stand I don't know.
It's so like
the gaming
cyber '90s. Yeah. Like, how are you? How do you not like it? Wow. Who are you? Is this Cody?
It's Cody. I can talk about Robert Zemeckis. No, but here's my Lance Henriksen story. I did meet Lance Henriksen. I think you did too, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
But I have a picture with him, his arms around me. It's a very, very personal. It was a special moment between both of us. Two Lances coming together. We're both wearing chambray shirts, like chambray colored like shirts. It's really strong handshake. One of the best handshakes I've ever
put my hand on. He does have a very strong handshake. I met him at, I'm gonna test my memory, Texas Frightmare. Before I got divorced. So let's say 2018 maybe. And the day, so he had, he had a signing table, and normally I don't really care about stuff like that, but I was like, I love Lance Henriksen and I'm happy to throw him a 20 to sign my whatever. Anyone else? I'm like, no. So I brought my copy of his book, Not Bad for a Human. And like everybody else in line had, you know, posters and movies and whatever. And that's fine. You know, everyone, you know, you get whatever you want signed. But he was actually like really excited that I had his book to sign. And I was like, oh, and he like sat there and talked to me for a little bit about it. And he talked about, you know, being interviewed for parts of it or writing parts of it. And I was like, okay. And then on top of that, it was his birthday that day.
Oh yeah. I remember you telling me this. Yeah. And everybody saying,
yeah, we all got to sing happy birthday to Lance Henriksen. So that was a good day.
Yeah. I met him at Comic Palooza in Houston. I was tabling with some of my art. And it was before it opened. I think it might have been the last day. And he was just walking around by himself. And, you know, me like a fucking dork. I'm all, Lance. You know, jumped around my table. And yeah, he was very cool and was looking at the art and some of the comics and stuff. He's like, it's good stuff. But took a picture. But yeah, I mean, you and I both love Lance Henriksen.
very much.
I ended up buying, because he does pottery too.
That's right. Yeah.
I ended up buying one of his platters that I have out in my house that catches all my tchotchkes and knickknacks. And but it's good stuff. And it, you know, it's signed and stamped on the back. I love Lanson. Yeah, yeah. He's like a celebrity that I'll geek out over. And I mean, I wasn't like a dick. I didn't ask for his like signature or anything. I was just like, can I take a picture with you? You know, I love everything you're in and everything you do and your art. He's like, hell yeah. Mm-hmm. And we were the lances joined as one to make a super lance.
It's a good moment. Yeah. You have to post a picture of that.
Cherish that forever. Yeah, that. I think I've posted it multiple times on Instagram, like every time it's his birthday or something.
As well, you should. All right.
Okay, so Lance rules.
He's clearly the best part of Yellow, of this last segment here. You know, Kirk Douglas was clearly channeling his character in Paths of Glory, I think, a little bit. But Lance Henriksen is 100% like he's going for it in this one. This one's definitely my favorite, not just because of the cast and Lance Henriksen, but it's got great gore in it for not being a horror movie, especially when Henriksen, Ripper, his character, gets blown up and he comes to narc on Eric Douglas's character, Lieutenant Calthrop. And like he's holding his helmet over his stomach. And like he's like, he's yellow, sir. And like he pulls the helmet off and his guts just spill out. I'm like, fuck yeah. This is amazing.
Yeah, definitely the best looking segment with the biggest budget, but the dead soldiers all over the place, and then that Lance Henriksen. Yeah, that's what I was wanting from each of these.
Yeah. This one, the twist at the end of this one, I like this one as well. I do like it's a downbeat ending with a twist. So you have a twist in the first one, but it's an upbeat ending. This one gives you a twist, but downbeat ending. So
yeah,
I do like it for that. Is this, I mean, I know you said you're kind of going back and forth between a few of them. Is this one of your favorites or?
Yeah, right away when it started, I mean, with Lance Henriksen, it's kind of comedic when he's yelling, damn, at all the dead soldiers, if he's talking to him.
Yeah.
I mean, as soon as it starts, and you could see the production value compared to the others, right away I knew this was my favorite, like straight up. And when you see Lance Henriksen credit over there with Kirk Douglas and stuff, I'm like, yeah. And the twist ending, I did kind of see it coming, but but it still doesn't really take away from the feels from it.
Yeah, you're right. Definitely had the biggest budget here. I love the part when Lance Henriksen, like you said, he's going from person to person and he asks like, where's the lieutenant? And the guy points and his fucking arm just gets blown off.
Yeah.
And as soon as that happened, I was like, I mean, we'd seen some dead bodies already up to that point, but yeah, once that happened, I was like, oh hell yeah, I'm in for this one. So yeah.
And I didn't go back and watch the Tales from the Crypt to see if the Crypt Keeper had anything to say about this one.
Oh, his joke at the end of it was no guts, no gory.
That's good.
I can't imitate Kassir's voice, but yeah, that's he had a good joke for this one. So any other notes you have on Yellow?
Yeah, no, that's it.
So favorite segment for me is for sure Yellow. I know, you know, you said this was yours as well. Let's talk about other anthologies though. We got a little bit of time here.
Okay.
So Adam actually brought this up in our Discord asking about favorite segments from anthologies specifically. And mine, I think it might've been in Trilogy of Terror before I saw Asylum, the Amicus, film.
Yeah, that's a great one. Yeah. I didn't take note of like a favorite segment. I love Body Bags and I love the Stacey Keach hair one. You know, him being so crazy into his hair growth and his hair loss.
Yeah, Body Bags is up there for me too. See, this is tough because like, yeah, so it's all like Frozen Fear and the Weird Tailor from Asylum are always going to be up there for me. But then when I go back and rewatch other anthologies, I'm like, oh, I love this segment, you know, like even Creepshow 2 and The Raft. Like I think as a kid, that was my... Like that thing terrified the shit out of me. I was like, I am never going in a fucking lake ever again. Like,
yeah, same with the hitchhiker, the Thanks for the Ride lady. That guy creeped me the fuck out as a kid.
Yeah, for sure. So Body Bags is definitely up there. Asylum. I know Adam mentioned like Scream Time. Matt mentioned the ventriloquist dummy from Dead of Night. Let's see. Jim said the Mortuary Collection, recent, as a favorite recent anthology.
Yeah, I saw that at South by Southwest a few years ago. It's a good one.
I Can't Stand Pickles also said any of the Amicus ones are cozy blankets for sure. He mentioned The Raft from Creepshow too. And then Femke Ultra actually brought up Jorg Boot. I can never pronounce his last name. Boot Geirat. Geirat. Der Todesking. Splatter horror guy from Germany. And his stuff is great.
I love some of the mainstays, like the original Creepshow was probably my favorite. I feel like every single person involved in that movie at that time and was just at the top of their game. It's like perfection. Tales from the Dark Side, the movie.
Right. Yeah. The Lover's Story. Is that what it's called? Lover's Tale or something like that.
Yeah. And I mean, speaking of perfection too, like Debbie Harry, I love the wraparound story in Tales from the Dark Side.
Yeah.
Rusty Cundiff's Tales from the Hood with Clarence Williams. Mr. Sims is one of the best characters ever. I just recently watched The Monster Club, I think for A Horror Gives Back with Vincent Price. That's with John Carradine, I think. And that one is just super silly. I mean, I really do love a good anthology. There's a lot of bad ones out there, especially some of the more recent ones. But mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of like the VHS, whatever's going on with all of those.
I've only seen the first one and it was just okay. I was like, it wasn't blown away.
I'm not like everyone for Fantastic Fest, which I did not go to this year, but we're excited about, I think it was VHS 85 coming out this year. I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah, it was something.
I'll just rewatch, you know, Asylum again. Who cares?
they're perfect like October movies, these horror anthologies.
They really are. And they're so easy to watch because as soon as you're kind of like, about whatever segment you're watching or like you're into it, it's done and you're moving on to a next one. So I love that about them. They're such an easy watch. So
yeah. Do you have a favorite Tales from the Crypt episode that you remember?
Go ahead. Yeah. I have to think.
I'll tell you mine. It's probably Carrie and Death from season 3. Starring Kyle MacLachlan.
Of course.
Yeah, he plays that lunatic, that criminal who's being tracked to the desert by like a cop on a motorcycle, and the cop catches up with him and he handcuffs him, but he ends up being killed. So he's kind of dragging his body all over this scorching desert, and this buzzard and this vulture is following him, kind of waiting for him to die. It's so good. Like, I had mentioned that, you know, actors just kind of lose their mind in these anthology roles, especially in the Tales from the Crypt episodes. And Kyle MacLachlan in this is fucking unhinged, just, you know, saying fuck as many times as he can and laughing like a maniac.
Yeah.
And the ending, it has really good practical effects too at the end. It's a good one. That's the one I remember most.
Yeah.
And it really stood out.
I know there's one I remember. I can't think of the name right now. Like, the ones that I watched recently, the ventriloquist dummy, honestly, like that's, if I had to, you know, go back and give a top five now, I'm pretty sure that would be in there. It's that good. God damn it. What was it called? I know it had like a clever name. It was like there's like some kind of prank that gets pulled. Abracadaver. Thank you. I had to look it up.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's season 3 too. It might be.
Looks like, yes, it is.
Yeah, that's the season I remember watching the most as a kid.
Yeah, season 3, you know, usually is, you know, good stuff. They get their footing right there. So ventriloquist dummy, but yeah, as a kid, I think Abracadaver is probably my favorite. Okay. Double feature, Lance, for an anthology. What are you going to do?
Oof. So yeah, at first I thought a lot of people latching onto the young Brad Pitt and his performance, which you know, makes sense because, you know, he's a huge star now. I do recommend California, that with a K, from 1993. Mm-hmm. But I love that we have never covered, which you had mentioned on our last episode, a horror Western or an anthology.
Yeah.
For that matter. And I'm gonna pair it up with a full-on horror Western and an anthology, another anthology, which this one has a great tagline. It's Hit the Trail to Terror.
That's
and
good.
It is Grim Prairie Tales from 1990, directed by Wayne Coe. This is on, I watched this on YouTube, actually for this episode. So I'm picking it from a recent watch. Mm-hmm. Stars James Earl Jones and Brad Dourif in the wraparound story. So James Earl Jones, he wanders up to Dourif's campfire late one night, and they begin to trying to outdo each other, telling these weird, scary, kind of supernatural tales. And I feel like Grim Prairie Tales doesn't hold back as much as Two-Fisted Tales kind of does.
Yeah.
You know, they are a little tame here and there, but there's some bigger surprises that in Grim Prairie Tales that you don't find in Two-Fisted Tales. One moment in the second story, it literally had me reaching for the remote to rewind what I just saw. I was like, did that really just fucking happen? I'm not going to spoil it because everybody should watch it. And these are short segments too. It's like an 86 long minute. And I think there's four total segments. There's a very random Bill Plimpton style animated sequence that just pops out of nowhere in one of the segments, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but it looks super cool. And then the first segment stars Will Hare, who is Grandpa Chapman from Silent Night, Deadly Night.
Oh, shit.
And he basically plays Grandpa Chapman in this segment. Mm-hmm. Also, he's in Back to the Future, so there's a Zemeckis connection there.
There you go.
But I have to, I mean, James Earl Jones in this seems to be channeling Oliver Reed in his character.
Hell yeah.
It's just glorious to watch. I mean, he's an amazing actor, but this could be one of my favorite performances of his. I mean, I could have probably just done an hour and a half banter between James Earl Jones and Brad Dourif, because their scenes are definitely the best.
Nice.
And they spend a lot of time on the wraparound story, which is good, but definitely more horror Western. All the segments in Grim Prairie Tales all take place in the Wild West. But yeah, I think it'd be a fun night of short stories pairing these two together. What about you?
So I'm going with an anthology as well. I think we've talked about a lot of, you know, the goats out there already. So I'm going to go with one that's lesser told or lesser known tales. So like Two-Fisted Tales. And I don't think I brought it up on the podcast before, but I might have posted about it the first year we were live. I was doing like Christmas horror movies, because this one has a Christmas segment in it. So this is Tales from the Third Dimension from 1984. This has directors Worth Keeter, which folks might know him because he directed Unmasking the Idol and what's the sequel, like Order of the Black Eagle, or I don't know which is which, but it's basically the James Bond spoofs. And I think Vinegar Syndrome put at least one, if not both of them out. So Worth Keeter, Earl Owensby, Todd Durham, and Tom McIntyre. So you've got four segments. There's one that is The Visions of Sugar Plum. That's the Christmas time one. And it's got this like shotgun wielding granny who didn't get her meds or something like that. But there's also a Halloween segment and like a Don't Do Drugs segment. It's really good, you know, for what it is. But the best part about it is it's got a budget crypt keeper. So you don't have a wraparound story with this one. You have like a host introducing the segments kind of thing. So if you look this one up, you'll see like there's a skeleton at kind of in the forefront of the poster. And that's pretty close to what the skeleton looks like that's introducing each of the segments in this. So yeah, it's going to be just a full night of anthology films and short segments. So Tales from the Third Dimension, 1984. That's on YouTube for anyone who wants to watch it. Next movie, Lance. Where are we going? Where are we going next?
Okay, so I'm gonna stick to the 1990s, Erica.
Oh shit!
You started it. Okay.
I know.
And we don't have a 1990s category for Horror Gives Back, so why not? Okay, so this is a movie that you watched a few years ago, and your review piqued my interest. And I'm actually going to just read your review to get people ready for this. No summary this time, just okay. Erica's review.
Okay. I want to see if I can guess what it is based on the review, because
you'll get it right away.
Oh, okay. All right.
Canon film with Michael Dudikoff playing an asshole, abusive husband, cop whose Russian bride leaves him. Then she picks up Mark Hamill, who's a psycho killer with a fake eye fetish. But he doesn't kill her because he wants to take her to his doctor for electroshock therapy. Dudikoff gets strapped to the hood of a car while Hamill is driving, and every car is stolen or explodes. And then Robert Mitchum shows up. I swear I'm not drunk. Do you know the movie?
I can picture the poster, but I can't remember the title of it.
The movie is Midnight Ride.
Thank you.
From 1990. Directed by Bob Brauver. You already heard the main cast members, Dudikoff, Hamill, Mitchum. This is actually Mark Hamill's first R-rated horror thriller. And he was, you know, he was obviously known throughout the galaxy at that time as Luke Skywalker. And this is his first of many to come unhinged roles. And he's fucking, he leans hard into this character.
He is so unhinged in this. I love him in this. Okay, I'm not like mad that you picked a 1990s movie now. Sorry.
It's 1990. It's probably filmed in the late 80s.
It was, yeah. So it's really, it's technically 80s.
But yeah, I feel like this is the film where he first perfected his Joker laugh from what I've seen. So
yeah.
But it's currently on YouTube. It has 653 views on Letterboxd. And I'm going to predict it'll be everyone's favorite movie before the end of the year. Okay. Midnight Ride.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to revisiting that one. That one was a lot of fun. All right. If you're not already, you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Unsung Horrors. You can join our Discord. Link is in show notes or on our link tree on Instagram or Twitter. It's Horror Gives Back time. So now is the perfect time to join. Share your, you know, share your lists on Letterboxd, share your picks every day, whatever you, however you want to participate. But we hope that you do. You can also find our Horror Gives Back list on Letterboxd, and you can follow me there at Hex Massacre, as well as Instagram and Twitter at Hex Massacre.
And I'm on Letterboxd and Instagram at L Scheibe.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll see you back next episode for Midnight Ride.
Bye.
Bye.
Welcome, kiddies. Would you like to dance to death? All you have to do is come to the Crypt Keeper's party. A monster bash, if you will. Come on down! A feast. Only the best of fiends can come. We'll have skeletons of fun. So come on down to the Keeper's Zoo. I'm sure it will get grave reviews. Be on time if you can. But this is the Crypt Jam. Just jam. Oh, jam. The Crypt Keeper's in the house. With a groove that's nasty and mean. A permanent headache's the end of the mission. For you have entered the Keeper's Terrorvision. So everybody just make that dash. A dash to the Crypt Keeper's Monster Bash. So come along with the Keeper's plan. For this is the Crypt Jam. Jam! You horns! To me. Here we go now. Everybody in the house, let me see you go. All the monsters go. All the people and your friends go. Everybody in the house go. Horns. Everybody. Woo!
You're listening to the Prescribed Films Podcast Network, home to hundreds of hours of free podcast entertainment. The shows on this network all have a common goal, providing you with the best discussions about movies and other forms of entertainment media. The PFPN hopes to fill your earholes with audio joy. Visit our website with links to all the other amazing shows at www.thepfpn.com. Thanks for listening.